Good morning. The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able. Our flag salute will be led by Representative Van Orman.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Mary Shebist from Portland, who is reading a poem. She's a guest this morning, Representative Tomei. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you to Representative Tomei for inviting me. It's an honor to be here. I'm going to read a poem about a firefly, sort of importing one. We have many wonderful things here. We don't have fireflies. I spent many summers in Tennessee, and in the evenings I loved to watch the fireflies. And one evening I saw an especially bright one flashing from the grass, and bending down to take a closer look, I was startled to find that behind that particularly bright and beautiful flashing was a spider eating that firefly. And I've thought about that image often. And I've thought that if predation is to be found in all of nature, and we are part of nature, then part of our challenge must be to become conscious of that impulse in ourselves in order to control it. And it seems to me a small miracle that we can. So this is the poem, and luciferin and luciferase, they are the chemicals within the firefly that come together to make the light. In Tennessee, I found a firefly flashing in the grass. The mouth of a spider clung to the dark of it. The legs of the spider held the tucked wings close, held the abdomen still in the midst of calling with thrusts of phosphorescent light. When I am tired of being human, I try to remember the two stuck together like burrs. I try to place them central in my mind, where everything else must surround them, must see the burr and the barb of them. There is courtship and there is hunger. I suppose there are grips from which even angels cannot fly, even imagined ones. Luciferin, luciferase, when I am tired of only touching, I have my mouth to try to tell you what in your arms is not erased. Thank you.
Courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please welcome Mary Shebist, our Vogue poet for today. Mary is an award-winning poet who teaches at Lewis and Clark College. In the past few months, she has received an individual artist fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts, and she was selected for one of two Witter Bynner Fellowships in Poetry from the Library of Congress. Mary's first collection of poems, Granted, was a finalist for the National Books Critics Circle Award. She is also the recipient of a Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award and a fellowship from the McDowell Colony. Her poems have appeared in many journals and magazines, including Poetry, Virginia Quarterly Review, Tin House, The Iowa Review, and The Best American Poetry, 2008. Mary grew up in Pennsylvania, and she graduated from the University of Virginia in the Iowa Writers' Workshop. She now lives in Portland in my district with her husband, Jerry Harp, also a poet, and their two cats, Tristan and poor Tom. Welcome, Mary Shebist, and thank you, Mary, for reading your work today, and especially reading it so dramatically and beautifully. With Mary today is her friend and colleague, Mary Gross.
Thank you again. We appreciate you both being here. Further courtesies, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have three honorary pages with us today from Days Creek, and as I call your names, if you could stand up, please. We have Michelle Sussade, a 11th grader from Days Creek Charter High School. She stood up there. She likes to play sports, including baseball, volleyball, and softball, and she one day hopes to become an archaeologist. We also have today with us Madison Capito-Turner, a 9th grader from Days Creek High School. She likes to play volleyball and baseball and enjoys snowboarding and is a member of the high school green team. And finally, we have with us today Caitlin Wiggs, a 10th grader from Days Creek Charter High School. She's also a member of the high school green team and enjoys playing softball. She hopes one day to be a nurse or a social worker and to travel. Colleagues, please welcome these young ladies to the House. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ryan, stand up. Colleagues, I'm very happy to introduce Ryan Schiermeyer, who will be an honorary page today. Ryan is a 12-year-old and is in 7th grade at Rosemont Ridge Middle School in West Lynn. Ryan's interests include politics, American history, basketball, and baseball. And when I talked to him a little bit earlier about what his career goals are, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, he said somehow he wants to be in politics. So welcome, Ryan. We're happy to have you today.
Appreciate all of our pages. Thanks for your service to the House today. Let's move to our Oregon sesquicentennial history minute. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's history minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia, written by Edwin Batticella, who is a professor of English and writing at Southern Oregon University. This concerns the United Bicycle Institute. Ashland's United Bicycle Institute is the largest trainer of certified bicycle mechanics in the United States and the only school in the world teaching bicycle frame building. Serving both enthusiasts and professionals, UBI has more than 50 classes annually from basic repair to advanced mechanics, shop operation, and bicycle building. The 7-member faculty offers a certified bicycle technician program, a suspension technician certification, and advanced wheel building certification. Founded in 1981 by bicycle businessman Wayne Martin, who established United Bicycle Tool Supply in 1975, UBI has been owned since 1986 by Ronald and Denise Sitfin. Since opening, UBI has trained more than 8,000 students. Annual enrollment has grown from 58 students in 1985 to 600 in 2007, with students coming from every state and over 40 countries. UBI is a green business with an 8.4 kilowatt solar photovoltaic system providing much of the school's electricity. Ashland provides a supportive environment since it's also home to United Bicycle Tool Supply and United Bicycle Parts Incorporated, and such bike routes as a 28.5-mile Ashland Loop and a 24.4-mile Lower Rogue River Trail provide bike enthusiasts with opportunities for exploration. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have with us today Mrs. Beatty and 17 middle school students from Cobb Street School in Roseburg. They're up here. If you guys want to stand up, you can. We are glad to have them here today. Colleagues, please welcome to the House. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you here. Any further courtesies? We want to... Representative Jensen, we want to wish Representative Jensen a happy birthday. It's today is his birthday. Happy birthday to the Dean. Clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Excuse Representative Jefferson Smith. All other members are present. Message from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he's approved and signed the following bills, House Bills 2303 and 2762.
Message from the Senate. First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2228 relating to transfer of developmental rights from resource lands and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the second time is passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 56 relating to complaint of discriminatory practice requires complainant to sign complaint alleging unlawful practice of discrimination.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 56. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye, and Representative Wingert votes aye. Senate Bill 56, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 58, relating to discriminatory practices involving real property and declaring an emergency, allows a landlord to condition permission for modifications to real property on renter's agreement to restore interior of premises to pre-modification conditions.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 58. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Senate Bill 58, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 59, related to housing discrimination and declaring an emergency, allows award of prevailing party costs and reasonable attorney fees to intervener in housing discrimination hearing.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 59. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 59, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 55, relating to ineligibility for public works contracts and declaring an emergency, provides a contractor or subcontractor that intentionally falsifies information in certified statements concerning payment of prevailing rate of wage on public works contract is ineligible for public works contract for a period of 3 years.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 55. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Senate Bill 55, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 243, relating to criminal procedure, provides procedures applicable to motions in arrest of judgment in criminal actions.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 243. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Senate Bill 243, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 248, relating to juvenile proceedings, prohibits disclosure of certain personnel identifiers of victim or witness to youth or to witness to youth or youth offender in juvenile proceedings unless court ordered orders disclosure.
Would you like to read that one again, Obi? You enjoyed it so much the first time through. Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 248A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Senate Bill 248A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Barton, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Return of courtesies, please, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barton requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Barton.
Colleagues, with us today, we've just been joined by a fourth grade class from Damascus Christian School. If you guys would please rise. Colleagues, please welcome them. Damascus Christian School, as you may have heard, is one of the premier schools of its kind in the state. Welcome to your capital.
Great to have you in your House of Representatives. Enjoy your day. Any further courtesies while we're here? Back to the consent calendar. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 562, relating to Oregon Law Commission and declaring an emergency, adds two members to Oregon Law Commission, modifies qualifications for certain members of commission.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 562. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Garrard votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Senate Bill 562, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 99, relating to conditions of probation, modifies method by which person placed on probation may be tested for alcohol or controlled substance use.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 99. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 99, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2370 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Friday, May 15th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2472 relating to business energy tax credits, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2472A. Representative Barnhart. The House will stand at ease. Okay, so colleagues, we are back under third readings. We're under the third reading and final passage of House Bill 2472A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the BETSI, the Business Energy Tax Credit, has a long history in Oregon. Originally set up to establish conservation investments by business. In 2007, major amendments were made to increase the value of the tax credit from 35% to 50% of covered costs and add the manufacturer of renewable energy devices. That additional measure was wildly successful in that it brought helped to bring a number of solar panel manufacturing companies to Oregon, will assist in the development of battery technology and a variety of other technologies in Oregon. In 2008, we fine-tuned some aspects of the legislation by establishing sideboards on related economic development on renewable energy development. And now, in this bill, we are continuing to fine-tune this legislation. Colleagues, we've discovered, for example, that the 10% cost overrun provision is routinely used as a mechanism to increase the BETSI credit, and it's proposed in this bill to remove it for projects which have not been preliminary certified by the effective date of the bill. We have also, in this bill, added some sideboards for large projects. The vast majority of projects under this bill are small. They will continue to be managed in accordance with the system that's been in place for some time. But a few of the projects have gotten to be very large. Most of them seem to be wind projects that are related to the RPS in California. And the sideboards that we've added have to do with the requirement of development of jobs, the economic benefit for the state and local governments, and the revenue impact, so that the Department of Energy has the capacity to actually manage the BETSI development. We do not believe that this will adversely impact even these very large projects because of other ways in which they are able to raise funds. We are adding in this bill the manufacture of electrical vehicles designed to be used on public roads or component parts. We are trying to help with the governor's plan to drive another manufacturing sector in Oregon, and you've read about that in the news, as a possibility of developing local manufacturing companies and also bringing large manufacturing companies from other parts of the world. One of the key problems with very large projects has been the definition of project. There are project developments, especially in the wind area, where very large systems are being developed in an area managed centrally by a central manager, but claiming as that they are in fact separate projects so that they can get additional subsidy from Oregon's taxpayers. Adding a better definition of the term project will reduce or eliminate what amounts to fraudulent claims to increase the state subsidy. Colleagues, these can be enormous amounts of money which would otherwise be spent on schools, health care, and public safety. The bill also tightens up rules allowing revocation of a certificate in the event that the business fails to continue to operate the system for the required number of years. And then finally, the effective date for the bill, the effectiveness of a preliminary certification is on this bill is only after the date of the bill. There are two certification times for under this bill. The first is the time of preliminary certification. Anything which has been preliminarily certified before the effective date of the bill, the 91st day after adjournment, will follow the old rules and not the new ones. And then finally, colleagues, we are fine-tuning the eligibility requirements. The $40 million cost for manufacturing plants continues. We are changing the middle rank of eligibility so that the $20 million cost will continue for those renewable energy systems producing 20 megawatts of power or less. For others in the same category, it drops to $15 million for other renewable energy producers. Colleagues, this is a good bill. It's a fine-tuning bill. The object of this bill is not to raise money, although it has the effect of raising a very small amount of money. The object of it is to continue the ongoing development of Oregon's transition to the future economy that we have to have if our state is to be successful, operating our state through renewable energy. I urge an aye vote, maintaining the highest level of efficiency in the use of our tax subsidies improves the odds that we will actually be able to make it through this transition to the future economy where we use less fossil fuels, more renewables, cleaner environment, and, colleagues, more jobs and a better economy. I urge your support for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, each and every one of you, reach behind if you can, if you're not arthritic, and pat yourself on the back as best you can. Pat yourself on the back, especially if you were here in the supplemental session we had in 2008 or earlier. The reason I want you to pat yourself on the back collectively is for the business energy tax credit. Seldom, very rarely do we ever have a situation when we're looking at a government program where the results exceed our expectations. Once again, with the Betsy, where the results of this program actually exceed our expectations. Colleagues, we do our best work here, but how often can we say that that is the result of a policy or a program that we put in place? But without hesitation, without question, the Business Energy Tax Credit is such a program. I was very proud of the 2008 supplemental session. It was an experiment, and I'm not sure what we learned from that experiment. We'll look in the future. But what I am very proud of with that supplemental session was our improvement of the Betsy. I think that was the biggest take-home thing we did in 2008 was the expansion of the Betsy. And what did we do when we expanded the Betsy? We dramatically improved our ability to create renewable energy. We even more than that, increased and improved our ability to manufacture renewable products. And we, most importantly, we created Oregon jobs. We did everything that we talk about almost on a daily basis that we want to do. We want sustainable energy. We want to promote industries of tomorrow. We want to create jobs. Well, the Betsy does all of that in spades. Now, the Revenue Committee spent a lot of time looking at this bill. We spent hours and hours. I can't recall how many, but you know it when you see it. It was probably 10 or 12 hours that we spent on the Betsy in various days and various testimony. With 10 members of the Revenue Committee, we probably had 10 different opinions on what was right or what was wrong with the Betsy. And that's emblematic in how many amendments we had. I may be off by one or two, but I think we had 23, 24, maybe 25 amendments that we considered in the course of our deliberation on this bill. And I would argue that that's emblematic of the point that the law, the program, isn't broken. And so if something isn't broken, it's awfully hard to fix it. And you spend a lot of hours discussing it, and you spend a lot of amendments deliberating on something that's not entirely broke, or if it is not perfect, you had 10 very different opinions on what the problems were or what the improvements were. I don't know that we ever had a consensus on that, although we did have a final vote, of course, and finally adopted the amendments we adopted. What I know is this, colleagues, that the Betsy is a proven program that does everything that we want it to do. Whether you're a conservative, a liberal, a Republican, a Democrat, it meets the kind of policy objectives that we want for this state. Industries of tomorrow, renewable energy production to help us get to the RPS and other good reasons, and most importantly, creates Oregon jobs in this time when what we're lacking is more than anything else are those Oregon jobs. Colleagues, this will have, we could have done worse, there's no doubt about this, but this will have nothing but a dampening effect on one of, if not the most successful Oregon program that's ever put together. I can't support it. It's why I didn't vote. It's why I voted no in committee, and I would urge you to take a real solid look at this and ask yourself, is this the time? Is May of 2009, given our larger economic situations that are going on, is it the time to start rolling back or putting a wet blanket on a proven job creator, a proven energy producer, a proven benefit to those folks in eastern Oregon who have been struggling in the natural resource economy, to give them some lease monies for their ranches and for their farmlands? Colleagues, I urge you to take a solid look and a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
As one of the members of the Revenue Committee who spent not only the time on the Revenue Committee listening to much debate and also one who worked on the subcommittee on this bill, I have great familiarity with it. I can also assure everyone that I think that the Betsy has been an enormous and successful program and one that deserves to be continued, and that's why I'll be voting for this bill. I also think it's had a great and positive impact, for the most part, on Eastern Oregon, and that's another reason I'll be voting yes for this bill. It has had a positive and will continue to have a positive impact on small communities in Eastern Oregon, and if you'll notice, there is an exemption for smaller 20 megawatt or less projects. It's the third reason I'll be voting for the bill. Oregon State University's study indicates that those smaller projects actually bring more jobs to these small communities than these very large projects. Now, there's a problem with the Betsy, and you can see it when you look at the people that flock toward it. And so there's a balance that has to be struck between wise investment of a subsidy dollar and being simply too lax in how we invest those monies. And I would suggest that the Betsy, as it currently stands, is too lax. And I would suggest that many of our dollars can be better invested under the new version, which we worked so hard to create in our revenue committee. It pains me to suggest that all people who use the Betsy are not looking out for the best interest of Oregon, but that indeed is the nature of business, to look out for business, not Oregon. And I would suggest that what we've created here is a far better device. I urge your yes vote on this bill. It tightens down what otherwise I think could be deemed a overly generous subsidy. I want to join my colleague from West Lynn in saying that it's a great program, but it deserves to be tightened down. I urge your aye vote. And Mr. Speaker, I must also state that I have the potential of a conflict and that my law firm on occasion represents people who have property that might lend itself to wind towers or geothermal activity.
So noted for the record. Any further discussion? Seeing Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
I may have missed it, but I was just hoping you'd explain to the body why today's vote requires a 3/5 majority.
This bill, according to the revenue estimate, would raise about $8.9 million this biennium. Under the constitutional rule as interpreted by legislative counsel, that brings it under the Measure 25 that requires the legislature adopt revenue-raising bills by a 3/5 majority. As I have said before, I disagree with that interpretation, but that is the interpretation.
Follow-up.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Can you explain to the body why how it raises that money? Is it
primarily, under the current rule, there is an allowance for a 10% cost overrun in the event that a project turns out to cost more than was originally expected. What we discovered happened was that every project has a 10% cost overrun. The primary source of this revenue is by removing that provision. We did not intend to subsidize a cost of $22 million or $44 million, but $40 million or $20 million. So removing the 10% cost overrun removes that additional subsidy that was not intended in the first place.
Representative Weird.
One more follow-up.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
Yes.
He does. So
do I understand then this, for lack of a better way to put it, is a reduction in the tax credit? Because this wasn't money we were paying them. This was money they then were not allowing them to take as large a tax credit as they would have, and that's why it's considered revenue raising?
Yes. Thank you. That's correct. The reason why LC thinks it's a revenue raiser is because the literal effect of it is that we have more money coming in. The reason I think it's not is because we're not actually raising taxes. We're simply reducing the amount of the subsidy.
Thank you.
Representative Wingard?
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Thank you. No, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes no. Representative Tomei votes aye. Representative Tomei votes aye. Representative Barton? Representative Barton is off the floor. House Bill 2472A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 1, in memoriam of Phyllis K. Beck, 1949 to 2008.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 1. Representative Boone. Colleagues, we're going to be receiving a motion to carry this bill over until the family of this that this resolution is honoring can be here. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that SCR 1 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Friday, May 15th, 2009 calendar.
Representative Boone moves that SCR 1 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Friday, May 15th, 2009 final reading memorials and resolutions calendar. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 6, in memoriam, Vern Cook, 1925 to 2008.
Question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 6. Representative Matthews, followed by Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Colleagues, Senate Concurrent Resolution 6 memorializes the life of Robert Vernon Cook, born 1925 to 2008. Mr. Robert Vernon Cook was born in St. Francis, Kansas on October 14, 1925. He lived there with his family until the Great Depression. The family moved, eventually settled in the great city of Gresham in Oregon, 1937. Upon graduation from Gresham High School, the late Vern pursued his undergraduate degree from Reed College and subsequently earned a law degree from the University of Oregon Law School. In 1955, the late Vern married Beryl Kirkwood. They raised five children, making Sandy River Canyon near Troutdale, Oregon, their new home. Mr. Cook served with distinction in the Oregon House of Representatives from 1957 through 1960 and in the Oregon Senate from 1961 through 1980. His most significant legislative accomplishments include increasing state funding for schools, voter registration reform, and land use legislation. He served on boards and governing bodies of numerous civic and community organizations throughout more than 50 years of distinguished public service to the people of Gresham and all Oregonians. Senate Concurrent Resolution 6 honors the late Vern Cook's more than five decades of public service to the people of Gresham and all Oregonians. A copy of this resolution will be sent to Vern Cook's wife, Beryl, and their children, Robert Jr., Randall, David, Mark, and Patricia. Colleagues, I want to say that Vern Cook was an individual well-known in the Gresham area. As a police officer, I had seen Vern in his act as an attorney. One thing that you had to know if you were going to go against Vern Cook is you have to expect anything and be prepared, because he will be. And he was very good at that. He was an incredible mind. His colleagues had told us during our testimony that he was somebody that didn't need the book of statutes behind his desk. Quite honestly, he had them memorized. He was that kind of a mind and that kind of a loss to the state of Oregon and the Gresham residents, and I would urge your aye vote, and thank you for this opportunity.
Co-carrier, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd just like to share with you that Vern stayed very active up until the end. He was a district leader for my House district within the Multnomah County Democratic Party. He was a community activist and highly involved up until the end. He was my leader as a precinct committee person. We followed his lead, and we worked hard together to try to do good things for our community. He will be sorely missed, but his contributions will live on in my district. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. I'm sorry, Representative Matthews, he did not wish to close. My apologies. Now, those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam? Representative Gilliam is off the floor. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Yes. Nolan votes aye. SCR 6, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of SCR 11 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, May 12, 2009. One of the carriers is excused today. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SJR 30, expressing support for Oregon Progress Board in developing Oregon Shines 3.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SJR 30. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, SJR 30 congratulates and encourages the Oregon Progress Board on the development of its Oregon Shines 3 project. The Oregon Progress Board was created in order to create outcomes-based initiative for the state of Oregon. And if you haven't had the opportunity to visit the website of the Oregon Progress Board, you can find performance measures for pretty much any area of government and any program of government broken down to the local level. The Oregon Shines 3 project is a project to engage partners all across the state to set our goals for the next period of assessment. I would encourage you all to participate and encourage you to support this good project with your I vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I will be voting no, and I want to explain why I will be voting no on this resolution. When I first came into the legislature in the 2007 session, I was introduced to this process that we have called Oregon Shines by the Oregon Progress Board. It seemed innovative to me. It seemed like a great thing. Who wouldn't want to support such an effort to improve governance here in Oregon? But it became apparent to me that very few people seem to know what the Oregon Progress Board does and what Oregon Shines is, and B, those legislators that do know don't really use it as a roadmap as much as it should be used for as much money as we spend on the process. So as a matter of principle, I think that we either need to get serious about governing with the Oregon Progress Board, the Oregon Shines process, or it needs to go away, one or the other, so I will be voting no.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the resolution.
To the resolution. Colleagues, I had the privilege of working on the Oregon Shines task force years ago and found it to be an interesting exercise. As years passed and I was involved less and less, I came to find that I agreed with, get it right this time, the representative from the economic hub of Lane County that it is a great idea poorly realized. And with some more modest input, I think possibly it could be something that would greatly benefit Oregon, because the thinking that went into all of the work and all of the work that goes on in that board is something to behold. But I will be voting no. I gave a courtesy vote in the committee and made these same remarks, and I would just say I'm sorry to have to vote this way, because I think it's a great idea, just poorly executed. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey votes aye. SJR 30, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SJR 39, recognizing and honoring Pendleton Roundup Centennial Celebration.
Don't you love it how you said Pendleton Roundup? The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SJR 39. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, asking your support today for the resolution commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Pendleton Roundup, which will be not this year, but next fall, a year from now. Somewhere back in the dark ages, like around 1967, when I made my trip for the first time to Pendleton to interview for a job there, as I left the beauties of the hills of Montana, the mountains, and across the Continental Divide and dropped down into the Pendleton area, I was reminded there was only a couple of reasons that I was interviewing for this job, since I already had one. One of the reasons I'd long heard about the phenomenon of the Pendleton woolen mills, and in fact owned a couple of things over time that had that label on them. So there was a certain curiosity about Pendleton there. And the other thing that was a point of some familiarity with Pendleton was I recognized the name of the Pendleton Roundup. The Roundup being one of the really premier shows, rodeo shows, in the world and certainly in the United States or in North America. Compared at that time and still with the Cheyenne days, Calgary Stampede, and some of the others. The reason that rang some sort of a bell for me was, you will recall at the beginning of this session I was hobbling around here with later a cane, before that a walker, to the results of a knee replacement. That knee replacement came from my younger years, or originated in my younger years, when I had some aspirations, foolish though they might have been, of becoming a rodeo performer. At one of those performances, I ran across apparently a Democratic horse who took grave exception to my being on his back and proceeded to dispose of me rather crudely. The result was a broken knee and a couple of fractures in other parts of the leg and a terribly wounded eagle. So the idea of finding some way to get even with horses and rodeos, and being at the city of the Pendleton Roundup had some appeal for me. At any rate, the Roundup, as I started out saying, is certainly one of the premier shows in North America. There's a more whereases than I'm not going to read for you in the resolution. But a couple of things, come to mind. One is the number of volunteers. This is a show that the people from surrounding or from other cities who put on similar sorts of activities all admit it, that they couldn't do it. The directors from Cheyenne and from the Stampede, Calgary Stampede, admit they could not do it with the size of crowds that you will get in a community, like Pendleton. The reason that they are able to do it is because it is truly a community activity. And the number of volunteers, the entire program was put on originally by, and still is, by volunteers. Everybody in the community, you do one of two things. You either volunteer to be in the Roundup in one manner, shape, or form, or you go to the coast for the week. Of course, most of us stay there to participate, in the activities. I think maybe you know, we've perhaps said enough. This is certainly an event that is worthy of the recognition, the 100th anniversary or the 100th performance, not the anniversary date, but the 100th performance will be a year from now. And in the resolution, it invites the entire state of Oregon to be there during that time. I admit that that may border on being visions of grandeur to have the entire state of Oregon there that week, even passing through that week. But be that it may, I want personally to extend to all of you and your families an opportunity for once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to attend the Pendleton Roundup in the year of its 100th anniversary. Thank you, colleagues. I do have one other thing. I would really be hurt. I really would be hurt if I came up with a smaller percentage vote than my colleague on the Senate side had in this.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Just on behalf of our great colleague from District 58, Litterbuck, vote yes.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
With great reluctance.
He barely does.
Just a quick question, Representative. Which was longer, the horse ride from Montana to the interview or your floor speech?
I don't know. I'd have to check that out to be real accurate with my answer, and I hate to say anything that wasn't accurate.
To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Letterbuck.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
Just very, very briefly. Letterbuck.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Votes aye. Sorry, I couldn't see over there. H.J.R. 39, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 89 relating to explosives. Senate Bill 94 relating to fingerprints requested by Director of Veterans Affairs. Senate Bill 141 relating to registered. Regulation of escrow agents. Senate Bill 188 relating to penalties imposed for violations of food safety laws. Senate Bill 238 relating to protective proceedings. Senate Bill 251 relating to restrictive weapons. Senate Bill 559 relating to motions for intervention juvenile dependency proceedings.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 217, which you will see is about three-fourths of the way down on your list, the Senate Bill 217 be read for the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 217 related to Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 217A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 217 comes to you from the Sustainability and Economic Development Committee. It does a couple of things. Oregon already has strong laws protecting historically significant property, and the bill amends the Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund to allow it to fund expenses incurred by the Attorney General in enforcing those laws and allows the fund to accept donations, gifts, or grants. Also to provide that attorney's fees and costs recovered in the exercise of the AG's civil enforcement authority go back to the Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund. Simple concept, urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Why I voted no. The bill expands the use of the revolving loan funds to pay the AG for expenses, as explained. Basically for doing his job, monies collected through AG enforcement will go back into the fund so that the AG can once again be reimbursed for enforcement actions, put money back into the fund, enforce, collect penalties, deposit penalties into the loan fund, get reimbursed out of the loan fund, seek further enforcement actions, collect penalties, and put penalties into the loan fund. This actually sounds more like a revolving AG expense reimbursement fund rather than a revolving loan fund. This is like putting a traffic ticket quota into the traffic cop statute, and it gives an incentive to the AG to look for people to find that they might not otherwise in order to expand and perpetuate a new dedicated funding source for their office. Now, the AG's representative stated during committee that there was precedent for such a scheme, but I'll ask you, does that make it right? The AG should be funded from general fund. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, a report was released on the AG's billing practices, and it was found that the attorneys don't even itemize their billing. So will the money from the loan fund really be used to reimburse for expenses related to enforcement action? The Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund should be kept as that, a loan fund, and not a dedicated slush fund for the Attorney General.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Reed, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 217A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 12, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request the rules be suspended so that Representative Barton could vote on House Bill 2472, and the vote will not change the outcome.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Barton to vote on House Bill 2472. The vote will not change the outcome. Is there objection? I hear objection. Yep. One, Representative Hanna, you requested unanimous consent. Another option would be you could move to suspend the rules, which requires 40 votes to suspend the rules, if you'd like to proceed that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request to suspend the rules then for a 40-vote opportunity that Representative Barton might be able to vote on House Bill 2472. May I also explain the extenuating circumstance?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, Representative Barton was witnessed voting on the floor via his fingerprint in one of the keypads, at which point he thought he had voted. He then left the floor, followed by the sergeant-at-arms, who recognized, based on information that was given from the clerk, that his vote did not register. He thought it did. It did not. That's why we're going through this process.
Representative Hanna requests Representative Hanna moves that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Barton to vote on House Bill 2472. Those who are in favor of that rule suspension will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion carries. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Further announcements, Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Following adjournment, Republicans, please get your lunch. We'll try to begin caucus at 11:45.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Democrats, let's caucus immediately following adjournment, and we will be finished in time for you to have lunch after that. Thanks.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to invite you down to the Women's Health Fair down in the Galleria. Please stop by and get information for yourselves, for your wives, for your girlfriends, for your daughters, for nieces, etc. Thank you.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Tomei.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. This is the Governor's Proclamation for Monday, May 11th. Whereas the National Women's Health Week celebrates the extraordinary progress in women's health and recognizes that more needs to be done to safeguard the health of women for generations to come, and whereas women from all walks of life and at every stage of life have unique health needs that should be addressed, and whereas keeping women healthy and safe and promoting awareness of women's health issues depends on partnerships with social health and other services, and whereas women can promote health and prevent disease and illness by taking simple steps to improve their physical, mental, social, and spiritual health, and whereas women's health remains a priority for families, communities, and government, and our commitment to keeping women healthy is stronger than ever, the governor here does proclaim May 10th to the 16th, 09, to be National Women's Health Week in Oregon, and encourage all Oregonians to join in this observance. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, there are hundreds of children in Oregon's foster care system right now, this morning, because of their parents' addictions to drugs and alcohol. It is a crucial time in the life of an addict when their children are taken away. It is often the motivation that spurs a mother or father to get sober after decades of substance abuse. Today, the parents of these foster kids are able to access the evidence-based intensive treatment and recovery services that this body invested in 2007. In the short time since that money was translated to treatment services in communities, we already are benefiting from the savings to child welfare system. We made a great start in 2007, but now we need to go the rest of the way to ensure that every parent with a child in foster care has the opportunity to get clean and sober and get their children back. There is still an unmet need for residential treatment for these folks, and we need to continue to support the intensive outpatient treatment that has been so effective in this biennium. And then finally, we owe it to those children who are living every day in hope of returning home to their parents, and in these economic times more than any others, we owe it to taxpayers to support programs that demonstrate the kind of impact that we have seen here today. And I think all of you had received this on your desk, too. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is from a constituent in my area. He states the following. Roxy Ann Lanes, which is a bowling alley, is a quintessential definition of a small business in Southern Oregon. We have owned the Lanes since July of 2004, and we will celebrate our 50th anniversary this August. We used to have 20 employees. Now we're down to 18. We started to experience a recession in September 2007, which normally is the beginning of our busy time. This was immediately followed by the reduction of our video lottery business. We were impacted by the elimination of smoking in our facility, plus we experienced the increase of Oregon minimum wage from $8.40 to $8.40. A 45-cent increase translates to an annual increase of $1,000 by itself per minimum wage employee. At this time, about June of last year, we started to feel the decline in our business. We now, at this point, have also a secondary business, which is a plumbing business. We had four plumbers. We're down to two plumbers. This, again, is due to this recession. This is, again, due to the economic condition in Oregon. And I would strongly suggest that we, as a government and leadership, do something to make the environment better for business instead of upping the amount for beer, for liquor, and, of course, for income tax and business taxes. This, if it were in the NFL, would be like piling on. This also is the death of 1,000 cuts. Please do something about it.
Further remonstrances, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Lest we stop on a negative note, and I appreciate the comments my colleague just gave, I just want to let you know that this weekend I was part of a 30-year celebration of a potter in my district. And not only has he supported his family of six, I believe, but he also brought in an apprentice this last year or two, and now this young man is taking a part of this. So this business has expanded 100%, and they're able to support their families making beautiful pots. So when you're in Cannon Beach, it's all this in heaven, too. Thanks.
Adjournment, Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Tuesday, May 12th at 10:15 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Tuesday, May 12th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.